Good evening, Bodhisattvas.
Good evening.
Bodhisattva Easter. I don't know. Bodhisattvero. That could get fun. I could go there, but I won't. A different road for another time. But tonight I'd like to begin with a warm-up exercise.
What have we been doing all day?
A warm-up exercise of a different sort. So for... for Frank,
si.
The cantor Frank, when we start this exercise, would you bring an Incan to me, please? Not right now, when we begin it. That'll be part of your particular path. So right now, just take a moment to check in with you, yourself, and your state of being as you are in your seat and in your place. Just note how it is to be you in your seat, in your place. So just take note of that and put it in your little invisible pocket. A few words or just, you know, the sense of it. Stick it in your invisible pocket. And now get up and move away from your seat. You might even say a brief hello, make eye contact, just do something. Nothing too extravagant, don't go too far. And just do that until I ring the bell, and when I ring the bell, stop. Stop right where you are. Unless you give me a back rub. Close your eyes. Become silent again. Take a deep breath or two. Let awareness and attention find you and settle in. And connect with your state of being now. And with that attention and awareness, as I say these next words, let that attention and awareness be there and notice what you notice. Please return to your seat and your place. Literally. Literally.
That's good.
So you're speaking from a particular right now.
Absolutely. So now, check in and put a few notes in your invisible pocket from that experience and where you are now. And we'll see where it rolls along with us later. This is just an idea that came to mind because, as I've mentioned, I've been hanging out for a while with Return and returning and wondering about it. And noticing experiences and things happening for me that I'm just going to be exploring tonight, kind of my field notes from the past few weeks. And as you've been here in retreat, you've been doing the warm-up exercise all the time. You're noticing what it's like to hang out with it as well. So you have these field notes within you. And I wanted to bring in that particular one just because of your guinea pigs. And I'm curious. I'm curious what it might bring. And it's also about when we take up these matters, these deep matters of being, of living. You've heard us say again and again, trust your own experience. Yeah? You can trust the exact experience you're having. You can trust that to tell you something, to tell you what you need to know, to reveal to you what wants to be revealed. You don't have to go searching and listening to others and trying to figure out the answers there. It's good to do that, but it's really, it seems like a must. You must trust your own experience. And it's not the thing of privileging it above anybody else's. It's immediate, that's why. It's what's happening here and now. Your experience is informing you. Be curious about it. Trust it. Look into it. Okay? Because I notice things arise for me and I don't even understand maybe that they've arisen. Or don't understand why I have this thing that I enjoy. Where something comes to mind and I'll say it and I have no idea what I'm saying. The words make sense, the sentence is structured, but it's like, what do I mean? I don't know. And it's nice that I don't have to know what I'm saying before I say it. And I've found out, well, I can say it, and then I can be curious about, well, what was that? And it might be a few minutes or weeks or months, sometimes years later, that I go, oh, that's what I meant. It's great. Wendy and Ian are used to me, especially after retreats. Like, one day I'll say, you know, oh yeah, as I was saying, and that was a week ago that I was saying, but a whole week's gone by, oh yeah, I was saying. And I pick up the thread, and they're like, okay, and they tolerate it. It's great. So even that, what you're experiencing may not be immediately obvious, but weeks, months, years later, you might go, oh, that's what that was. So, hanging out with Return. My initial experience, I kind of explained the other night, Sarah and I were speaking on the phone, and I just said, the sense of return or returning. And there's this phrase, I don't know the phrase, but there's this phrase about just return. And so I figured, I'll try to find it someday, but I have no idea where to look because I can't even know the whole phrase. So most of my hanging out with Return was because I couldn't remember the whole phrase. So I just had the word Return. It was only like a week ago that there it is, and found the reference. So I've really just been hanging out with that sense and the word of Return. And I was one evening driving down to Pueblo, and Return came to mind. And I noticed, for the first time, this had been going on for a little while, but when the word return came up, I had the sense that I had to turn to the left to return. Because my mind's like, oh, return, it's that way. Well, that's interesting, I thought. Why to the left? So I've been playing with that. Here, looking at, you know, there's the thing, the protocol, the guidance. When you turn to your cushion or your seat, that you don't turn your back on the Buddha, on the actual statue. So turning left isn't the way to return. Depends on what side of the room you're on. Some of you will turn left, some of you will turn right. And both of those are return. And then down here on our end, I figured out a while ago, we must be okay to turn our backs on the Buddha, because we have to return. And it still doesn't matter if we turn left or right. I notice I like to turn left in this situation so that I'm turning towards you when I say sit down. Over there I might turn right. So it wasn't just some habit I had. There was some kind of sense of needing to turn to the left. So I was curious about it more, and the other thing that came to mind was our walking meditation. There's, again, guidance and advice that for at the beginning of the retreat and for the days of the retreat, we mainly go clockwise to the right. But when we're getting to the end and things are winding down, then we might start going counterclockwise. But mostly we want to go clockwise to build up, you know, the energy is winding up, things are winding up, that's the energy to the right. To go counterclockwise to the left is winding down. So that, okay, that's to the left. Winding down, returning, that makes sense. And being curious about that particular avenue of left and right with walking meditation, I was looking into it at one point to see in our, you know, tradition and the cultures we came from, what did they have to say? And I found the, yes, go clockwise. Even the circumambulations of stupas and monuments are clockwise. Unless they're not. There's some traditions that will go counterclockwise. But one thing I discovered that close to my heart was Taoism. Going counterclockwise is the way of immortality. Because it's against time. So it's not a winding down, it's timeless. To go counterclockwise is to enter the realm of the immortals. So I thought, well, that's interesting about that left turn. And in the idea of return, how we've been saying it's continuous and right now. And you can hear the, it's timeless and you're doing it at this moment. It's immortal. So that's the initial kind of thing I noticed with return. Things happening in my mind that were guiding my body. Yeah. Still curious about it. Haven't landed on, oh, that's the reason why, but here's these different avenues and aspects for me to explore. So another thing I noticed, I'd be walking across the room at home, the living room, abiding with return, and my hand would be doing this. It's like I'd be thinking in my hand, I wasn't even trying, it's like, hello, look at me, I'm twisting and turning, but I'm just going, huh. And, oh, what's this hand doing? Then the sense, you know, slowing it down, it became like a this, opening up, closing down, opening up, closing down, and again to the left and to the right, but it works the other way. On the other hand, literally. But a sense of a flower came, you know, the petals tight and then opening up, returning, turning, or returning then returning was there. So I was enjoying that my body was also unguided by my mind and the feeling, my body was just starting to do a return, a turn and return, again and again, yeah. And that called to mind here at the retreat a couple of toys that do that kind of thing. One is Ian had one of these things where it looks like the pedals closed in like this, and you have this trigger mechanism. You push it, and it spins, and the pedals go ping, and there's a thing inside going, hello, and it's dancing around. When you push it and push it and push it, you keep it going, and then when you stop it, whoosh, closes up again. Yeah? So you turn it, and you turn again to keep it going, and then when you stop, it returns. It's kind of like birthing. Boom, there it is. It's open. Look at it, it's going. But you have to keep turning, otherwise it returns and closes in again. And fortunately, you get to return it to its openness. Yeah. And then there's those, I think they're called push-up toys. It's like the animal that's got the body parts, but there's a string holding them together, so it's down on the ground, all flopped like this. Then you hit the button, and it pops up. Then you let go, and it returns to plugh. Yeah. That place of that primordial being I spoke of, the essence of, after you manifest and do what you do, just drop, just return. Drop it all and wait to be called forth again by the thumb that pulls all your joints together. And even those, I think they come together in different configurations, depending on how many limbs and joints and attachments they have. So there's another thing that was dancing around with me as we're doing this serious work of meditation. I'm playing with toys in my mind. That's great. And you're welcome to borrow my toys, too, and play with them yourself. Some of you know that I like music a lot. And sometimes I wish I didn't, because I have so many songs in my head, I wish I could not. It's like, dang, I listen to so much music that it seems like a song's always following me. And sometimes I'd like it to be quiet, and it is sometimes quiet. Actually, most of the time now, I drive without the radio or anything playing. It's like playing music is the rare thing. And maybe because I have just so much music in my head. But the songs that show up in our, you know, if you're that kind of person, maybe it's poetry, maybe it's imagery. For me, it's songs. When they show up, well, I can be curious about what they have to say. And initially, these songs that I'm going to cover here, it was just the line, just one line showed up. And it's just in the days of the retreat that I've opened up more to realize the lines before and around these particular lines that go, oh, interesting. So the first one that came to mind was from Woodstock, the song Woodstock. And we've got to get ourselves back to the garden. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That sense of wanting to return. It's like, yeah, there's that call. We've got to get ourselves back to the garden, to the beginning, to start over, right? But the lines around it, we are stardust. We are golden. We are billion-year-old carbon. And we've got to get ourselves back to the garden, yeah? So there's that sense of the continuity of it and the timelessness, you know, billion-year-old carbon. Right here and now. And we've got to get ourselves back to the garden, back to the beginning. And it's funny because in this case, well, the garden would have come after the stardust and the golden and everything. So there's that dual movement, yeah? And it may not be the getting back to the garden in that way. Because the song is about coming to Woodstock. And that's how they're going to get back to the garden, is let's get to Woodstock, let's get to the festival, and get back to the garden. And it's not really a place. It's an experience, yeah? And maybe it's that experience of opening up wide as stardust, golden, and your ageless carbon, yeah? Then the Beatles showed up. This one's pretty direct. Get back, that song. Get back to where you once belonged. Right? All right. Where's that? Can you get back to where you once belonged? I mean, it already has this thing, where you once belonged. Doesn't say where you do belong. Where you once belonged. Will you belong there again? Interesting. Get back. Get back. Get back to where you once belonged. Sometimes we don't have that place that we belonged once. We're still looking for it, right? How do you get back to that? So there's that question of, well, what is that place, yeah? And the extra part of this that came to mind in the last couple of days, it's before the song begins, John Lennon kind of poking fun at Paul McCartney and his lyrics. Because the song begins, "Sweet Loretta Martin, thought she was a woman, but she was another man." That part of it, I don't know if it begins, no, that's in the middle, but that part's in there. So, if you know the song well, there's this part before they actually begin, John's doodling about on his guitar, and he's talking about Sweet Loretta, and he says, "Thought she was a cleaner, but she was a frying pan." So Sweet Loretta Martin thought she was a cleaner, but she was a frying pan. And I love it, because who do you think you are? Who do you think, you know, this idea of where you think you belong might be based on you think you're a cleaner. And you're trying to get back to where the cleaners belong, but you might really be a frying pan. And it's important to realize that you're a frying pan. who are you? Where do you belong? And to find out, you had to kind of know, well, who is this? What is this? All right? And that's kind of essential. Otherwise, you can go back to the land of cleaners and never feel like you belong because you're not a cleaner, actually. I don't know if you're frying pans. You have to discover, well, what are you? And is that your permanent thing? Are you always a frying pan? Don't know. So, getting back to where you once belong, don't know if it's a getting back or if it's the return, as in turn again. Turn again, and what are you turning into? And then where does that belong? That being of you belong? Again and again, moving forward and getting back to where you once belonged. Yeah? So, eternal belonging. Not in a steady single place, but based on, well, what piece of cutlery am I today? What kitchen utensil am I now? Then this song here has a particular resonance for me, John Denver. So, grew up listening to him here in Colorado, and from Rocky Mountain High. He was born in the summer of his 27th year, coming home to a place he'd never been before. That's, he recognized that. Feels like this practice. I'm coming home, the sense of home, but I've never been here before. But it's so much like home. Yeah? And for me, I started this practice when I was 27. And it was in the summer of my 27th year that I was practicing, and in the autumn I took refuge. So that really means to me something personal. In my 27th year, I was coming home to a place I'd never been before. But it definitely is home. And I get to come back to it again and again and again. So that, I just enjoy the idea of that homecoming, this practice being a homecoming. And it can be in that one sense of finding where you belong with these people who are just as weird as you. And they get you and they speak the same language and you don't feel like such an oddball. It's like, oh great, my tribe. I belong in this practice, in this place. And then there's the again and again coming home to this, to this, to this in the practice. Within that larger arc of having landed home, you get to keep coming home. And the other side of it is returning to a place that you never left. We experience that in practice too. It's like, I'm back. And I've never stepped away from this place at all. It's always been here. I've never left. But I feel like I'm returning to it. It returning to me, yeah. So it's more of a sense of it becoming vividly apparent, like you've been home all the time. Yeah. And that can also come in a large arc of a dose and small moments of doses of always been. Kind of like when I talked about this retreat, it always is happening and always has been happening, returning in that sense. So then I went into the etymology of it, which has been spoken about already. So just briefly, to return has the double sense of to go back, to turn back, but also to turn again, which seems to be, that's the hand thing. Turn back, turn again. It's both of those are return. One goes backwards, supposedly, and the other one is to keep turning again and again. But when I looked up the etymology, there was also something I hadn't considered yet. I haven't heard them come in here, but election results are called returns. Or your profits from your business. What returns did you get? So you've been here, you've placed your votes in your practice. I want this, this is what I'm looking for. Well, what returns did you get? That's what we're discovering all the time. What's my return here? How am I profiting? What are my profits? Am I in the black or in the red? Actually, you're in the eternal gray, probably. It's just always gray. I don't know exactly. Yeah, it seems good, but... So those kind of returns, the things that we put out, what returns to us as a result? Yeah. So you might toss that into the hopper of consideration. Then again, that looking up the etymology, they had just one phrase that brought to mind other common phrases. And as I've been in these last days again looking at it, I realized that the way I placed them, there's four of them, but if I take the first two and the last two, they kind of partner and juxtapose each other well. One is the many happy returns of the day, right? That phrase. Or just many happy returns. And it's something I never say. So I was like, well, why do people say that? I had to look it up. Oh, for your birthday, that's a common thing. Many happy returns of the day means may you live to see another birthday. It's kind of dire. May you not die for a year, at least. Or may you not die for many years and keep returning to this day, right? To this day of birth, your birthday. And that's already impossible. You can't return to your birthday. And it's impossible to return to this day. Many happy returns of the day. It will not be the day. You cannot return to this day. So what an odd phrase. So then, just let's take off of the day. Many happy returns. Just keep turning. Like Dory and just keep swimming, just keep swimming. If you've seen Finding Nemo, this is the Zen version. Just keep turning, just keep turning. That's what we do, we turn. I want to take happy off too. Is many returns, and that's just a statement of fact. Many returns, that's life. Many turnings again and again and again. So you have that sense of many returns of the day, which is impossible, because this day you cannot return to. And then the other phrase that partners it is the point of no return. Watch out, you're up at the edge, you're at the point of no return. If you go much further, all hope's lost, right? Well, that's a lie too. There's never a point of no return. Because you can never really return in the first place. And it's always just a turning again. And a turning back, which is just turning again in a different direction. So there's never a place where you're beyond hope. And there's never a moment where you aren't fundamentally changed. It's not like we're these static, still things, and we get to this point where all of a sudden it's going to change. You're going to lose everything. It's like you've lost it all moment by moment. You're always losing it. So it's not the point of no return. It's the vast landscape of no return. It's all hopeless. Hopelessly lost and hopelessly found. Hopelessly found? Maybe. So two impossibilities. May you return to this day again. Impossible. You're at the point of no return. Impossible. Good partners, I think. Then we have Dorothy in her sparkly shoes. There's no place like home. There's no place like home. There's no place like home. Yeah? And that sense we have of what that home is, whether it's one we've known or one we yearn for, there's no place like it. Yeah? Just click our heels and find it. There is no place at all like home. Then we have novel by Thomas Wolfe. You can't go home again. So those two live together. There's no place like home, and you can't go home again. And maybe that's why there's no place like home. Because you can't get there again. Yeah? Because then there'd be, every place is like home. And because the returning home is a continual happening. In each moment, it's a new turn, a returning, a turning again. And the home that is in this moment becomes a different home in the next moment. So there's no place that is home. Fortunately, it's a vast, wide, open area. And maybe you can't go home again because, again, you've never left. Right? So, kind of summing all those up, this appeared, another phrase that, a familiarity, maybe a capping phrase, condensing all of these things, or some of them at least, by Heraclitus. No person ever steps in the same river twice, for it's not the same river and not the same person. Yeah? You can't step in the same river twice because it's flowing and moving, that river. It's not the same river. You are flowing and moving just like the river, so you are not the same person. So it's impossible to step in the same river twice. It speaks to a sense of, you know, it could be a sense of loss. Like you're in the river, you feel it, it's like, ah. Oh. You move away from it, then you try to get back to that, and you're chasing something that you can never achieve again. And so it's a sense of loss, maybe. Or maybe it's a sense of freedom. You don't have to keep trying to get back in the same river because that's impossible. Understand that. Yeah? And you can not expend your energy trying to do that. Acknowledge you are river, it is river, constantly changing. So you can never step in the same river twice. And I call bullshit on Heraclitus. Because it is the fact that it is never the same river and you are never the same person that you can step in it twice. Because it is river meeting river. And it's not that particular moment of time or place. So just step in. Get in the river. The river's in you, you in the river. It flows. That is it. Maybe there's no twice about it because you're never out of the river. There's not even a once about it. Just be in there. Yeah? Fortunately, flowing and moving and changing. So then, the last thing I'll bring in is another song that came to mind here at the retreat. Maybe more obscure for some folks, but it's by Peter Gabriel. The title is called Washing of the Water, which I love. You've got water and you're washing the water with water. Washing of the water, this, that's already the river within the river, right? And it opens up. River, river, carry me on. Living river, carry me on. River, river, carry me on to the place where I come from. Carry me on to the place I come from. Yeah. And where is that place? Right here. This very place is paradise. This very body, the Buddha. This is the only place you ever come from. And the river carries you on to the place where you come from endlessly. You can trust it. And just keep coming from it. And be carried by it. Yeah? Turning and returning. So thank you.